This podcast is for general information only. It is not intended as a substitute for general healthcare services. If you have medical conditions, you need to see your doctor. Use of this information is at the user's own risk. Welcome to FitRx with Dr. Greg Dennis. Join me as we challenge the standard sick model of healthcare. This is your source for everything health, wellness, prevention, fitness, biohacking, and more. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of FitRx. I'm your host, Dr. Greg Dennis. I am a primary care physician in Mustang, Oklahoma, where I get to work with my wife, Dr. Lydia Dennis, and together we run Vibrant Life Direct Care, which is a cash-based practice where we focus on primary care, wellness, weight loss, sexual wellness, hormone replacement therapy, and many other services. As many of you know, I am all the time just reading books on health and wellness and longevity and fitness. And so sometimes I'll come upon one that I just really, really like. And what's cool about having this podcast is then I get to reach out to the author and, you know, actually interview the author and learn even more about it. And so I came across this book titled Built from Broken. The author is Scott Hogan. We are just going to dig in to kind of his story, why he wrote this book, how we can kind of optimize our musculoskeletal system, prevent injuries, all that kind of stuff. So he is a personal trainer, or used to be a personal trainer. Now he, and I'll let him tell you a little bit more, but now he runs something called Salt Wrap, which is a blog, and they sell nutrition supplements and things like that. And of course, now he's an author. So Scott, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Greg. Good to be here.
All right. Well, so I always like just hearing people's stories and kind of motivation for getting into this kind of thing. And so just tell us a little bit more about you and then how you came to writing this book, which I didn't say in the intro, but it is very scientifically driven. So you really did your research on this thing, just about treating injuries and injury prevention and just all that stuff, which we'll get into. But what was your motivation for this book?
You know, I always say I've been sort of writing this book my whole life, because ever since I was a kid, I was super injury prone. Just one of those kids, always had an issue. And, you know, any kid growing up is going to have the bumps and bruises. But for me, it was just lots of connective tissue injuries. I remember at like 8 years old, I had plantar fasciitis. I didn't know what that was. But through high school, just constantly injured, through college. And I had a lot of notes as I went, and I was trying to learn from all these things happening to me. Like, why am I always breaking down? So I think in the back of my head, I had this concept for probably a decade, but really in the last, I would say 5 years before I published the book, I had a few kind of big watershed moments where I realized that I was doing everything wrong. So even as a personal trainer, I was constantly breaking down, suffering repetitive use injuries. My lifestyle wasn't very conducive to staying healthy because I was sitting at a chair way too much. So I kind of went really deep into the research to figure out at a fundamental level, why can't I stay healthy? Why can't I go to the gym and exercise without hurting myself? And after a couple specific injuries that I had some breakthrough moments and learned from some really smart physical therapists on, and reached out to some experts in different fields around injury recovery, I realized there wasn't anything that assembled a coherent picture in my mind of everything for a novice, or not an expert necessarily, but everything a person would need to understand in order to build their own program to resolve pain, fix muscle imbalances, kind of understand how to train connective tissue in addition to muscles, and put that in a package where it could be read and followed like a program. So I just felt too much pain keeping all that in my head. So I had to write the book, basically.
Okay. Very nice. Well, let's get into the book a little bit. Sure. You know, I wrote some notes down, and one of the things you said is you do not have to and should not accept pain and movement dysfunction as a part of aging. And it seems like so many people do that. And I see it every day. Oh, I'm just getting old, and I hurt here and I hurt there. So talk about that statement a minute, if you would.
Sure. Yeah. And I've gotten some pushback from readers and clients I've spoken with on that, because aging is a factor, right? It's not like you can reverse aging just by doing some exercises. But I do feel like, especially, I'm just going to generalize and say, once guys and gals hit their mid-30s, late-30s, there's this kind of understood culture of, oh, yeah, I'm beat up. That's just how it is now, you know, and well, I can't do the things I used to do. And I think there's, if there was less acceptance of that and more deep diving and investigation of exactly why, I think we have a lot more control over that than we realize. I know, at least for me, you know, I'm 35. I'm not in my 50s, 60s dealing with these issues. But for me, taking ownership of that and saying, okay, this is not how it is. Maybe I can get to the bottom of this and figure out at a fundamental level why these things are happening to me. And that gave me a little more power of it. So that's really why I said that, is to give people some empowerment. Like, look, you don't have to just accept this, and you shouldn't accept this.
One thing I like about the book is you go a little bit against kind of traditional thinking and injury healing and stuff like that. And again, you really, it's well-researched, you know, backed by science and all that. And I love that kind of thing, because as I've learned just doing this podcast and my own just kind of clinical research as a physician, that many of our, as it pertains to medicine, well, and health in general, but many of the so-called norms or traditions are just, you know, not right. And just because we've been doing them, you know, for a lot of years, doesn't make it right. And so you really go against some of those traditional things, which we'll get into. But one of the things you talk a lot about is load training, and which again is kind of opposite of what we think, especially if we're dealing with an injury, that's the last thing we want to do is put load on that joint or muscle or whatever. But talk about just the importance, first of all, what load training is, and then the importance of that.
Sure. Yeah, I use load training really just to mean it's resistance training, but it doesn't have to be just resistance necessarily. So it's anything that puts a load against the joint system or a muscle. And I talk about that a lot, because especially in the injury recovery category, and from a conventional standpoint, there's a lot more focus on stretching, mobility, and manual therapy, and all that stuff's great and can be great. But really, at the end of the day, if you have, let's say, tendinopathy, you're not going to get past that with only manual therapy and stretching. Like, to really make a change in the tendon structure, you have to have some kind of load to start that realignment, collagen remodeling. So, and then getting to the bottom of common injuries, most joint injuries are tendon related. You know, there's obviously ligament specific tears and things like that, and fascia problems, but most injuries have a tendon, either injury or tendinopathy component. And really, to get past that, I really believe you have to have some kind of load training. I think the only other option is just to stop loading it in general, just stop using the joint, which is not a good option for most people. So I wanted to stress that from the beginning, like, hey, this is load training is, I know it feels like this is what's hurting you, but this is also the way, the obstacle is the way, whole thing.
What somebody to do, say, if they have an injury and their shoulder hurts, say, you know, shoulder's a very commonly injured joint. And so, you know, if they're going to the gym, it hurts, you know, to put any kind of load on it. And so is this just a matter of working with closely with a physical therapist, or what are people to do when they have an injury in order to be able to put some load on that joint to enable it to heal?
That's a good question. It's funny, there was a comment on an article not too long ago, and I basically just referred the question to a physical therapist. It's like, hey, you really need to go see a physical therapist on this. And one of our readers, who's a physical therapist, chimed in. It's like, it's so great to see somebody actually support other members of the community. You know, I'm not trying to say that what I'm doing is better than physical therapy or different. I think what I'm trying to focus on from an exercise standpoint is really transitioning people from post-physical therapy to where they need to be. I would say that's really my focus. So it's definitely not a replacement for physical therapy. And I get a lot of questions about shoulders, which is, that's my, you know, it's my Achilles heel, so to speak. I have a lot of shoulder issues, and that's super tough to diagnose. To diagnose anything without having hands on someone and seeing them move and screening, you know, it's borderline neglect. So I try to tread carefully on that. And this is kind of a obtuse answer to your question, but I think it's the correct one. One of the reasons it took me so long to put this book together is because I felt like, from a coaching standpoint, this can't be done. Like, you shouldn't just prescribe, okay, here's, you have shoulder pain, do this. You really need to have some personalized attention. But what I try to do is go to the very bottom at a fundamental level and say, okay, what are the things that are common among shoulder injuries per se? And what can we do to fix some of those things with little risk? So at a practical level, that's, let's say, working more on external rotation or more mobility in your anterior shoulder, the front of your shoulder. Doing those things is probably good for almost everyone, unless you have a severe injury that requires surgery, right? So those are the things I try to stick to is like, if you have shoulder pain, here are some kind of basic diagnostic tools you can look at. If you have severe pain or XYZ, definitely go see your doctor, go see your physical therapist. Don't just start trying to like crank dumbbells up to fix it. It doesn't work like that. But I also wanted to give people some options to do something besides just go the conventional route. So for shoulder specifically, in my chapter on shoulders and shoulder health, I talk about some of the commonalities that cause shoulder issues, some of the upstream problems like lack of thoracic extension, which I have terrible thoracic extension, you know, tight lats, a lifestyle that has you rounded forward, especially for people that are kyphotic like me and have a little bit of upper back rounding anyway. So those are commonalities. So even if it doesn't necessarily treat your injury, addressing those commonalities, I feel like is super powerful. And that's what a lot of therapy is. But to answer your question more specifically, I always say, go see a physical therapist first, get approved or get, basically cleared for a physical fitness program, and then try this out. So a lot of the people that read the book and come to me, they're post-physical therapy. I'm like, okay, you're good. Now go do the program, follow it. It's great to do this under the guidance of a professional. But yeah, at first, you really need to have eyes and hands on you to make sure that you're doing the right things and not making it worse.
So you talk about, you say what to focus on instead of pain relief, and you're referring to inflammation. So you talk a lot about how to decrease inflammation, and you obviously lose weight. It's kind of a no-brainer, but you talk about maybe lowering some carbohydrates, low inflammatory diet, move, sleep. I mean, you list all kinds of things, which most of these things shouldn't be foreign to my listeners. So talk about, you know, some of the highlights of those, maybe the more important things to decrease inflammation, and how inflammation correlates with injuries and then healing of an injury. And then the other thing I want you to comment on is one of the things you mentioned is to avoid NSAIDs, which is a common thing we do when people hurt is just say, you know, take ibuprofen and stuff like that. So talk about that, if you will.
Sure. Yeah. So with pain relief, again, I'm trying to give people tools that empower them to do something besides just focus on treating symptoms, right? Without understanding why. So those things that in the book where I talk about do this instead of pain relief, you know, addressing inflammation. A lot of times it's pain is inflammatory based, or, you know, for our older clients, synovial fluid. So talking about just greasing your joints with synovial fluid through movement before you go in and do something intense or start your exercise session. So that was the goal there, is to give people tools that address some of the core causes of pain. But yeah, inflammation, that's a controversial one. And it's tough because it's not black and white. And, you know, inflammation is absolutely necessary for healing. So it's not like you want to shut it down completely. But typically when people are dealing with repetitive use injury, unless it's very chronic and it's just basically degenerative, there's almost always a surplus of inflammation beyond what's good. I think we can generally agree on that. I believe the experts can agree that there's a level of too much inflammation and then zero is too little. So where in between, as far as the exact amount of inflammation that's healthy, I don't know. I mean, that's tough, but it seems to me that modulating inflammation, which means just keeping it from getting excessive to the point where you're getting super, acute pain responses when you're moving, I think that's helpful. So that was my goal with the inflammation. As far as NSAIDs, that's become a bit of a hobby horse for me unintentionally. And this is another area where I'm always interacting with people, and a lot of the doctors or different people on my list that sometimes they not prescribe it, but recommend that to the patients. Like, hey, look, you've kind of broadly said NSAIDs are bad and you should never use them. But here's the scenarios where it makes sense. So I would say to that, I don't think NSAIDs are bad all the time. I think it's pretty clear that chronic use has a lot of negative side effects, and it's hard to justify that just from a longevity standpoint. But from a joint healing standpoint, I mean, there's a lot of newer research coming out saying if you're popping ibuprofen all the time, you are absolutely killing your ability to repair connective tissue, not just from injuries, but day to day, you know, to recover from that daily stress that your body goes through during exercise or life. And I believe that that's one of the underpinnings of the very common repetitive use injuries that accumulate in middle age. I mean, I know I was this way. I used to pop ibuprofen all the time, like Pez. It was terrible. But to that point, there's absolutely scenarios where in a short-term situation, it makes sense. And I'm not qualified to say when that is. But what I want to get across to people is if you're depending on NSAIDs and anti-inflammatory drugs to get through your workouts, like there's something wrong with your workout, you know? So that's really the main point of that.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm kind of going to jump around in the book here a lot because we just, you know, that we don't have time to get through everything, but
you have a
chapter on how to train your collagen. Talk about that a little bit and just, I guess, the importance of collagen and then how we can train that or improve it.
Yeah, I think I came up with that name because of a show my kids watch. You can probably think of it called How to Train Your Dragon. Anyway, terrible joke. But yeah, so my goal with that was to get people to think about connective tissue as more fluid and more plastic than we do. So I think a lot of times we think of connective tissue like bones. It's just there. It is what it is. Muscles are the things you can build up or that shrink, that you can stretch or that contract. But there's a lot we can do to affect how connective tissue forms. I think it's a Davis's law that says basically your connective tissue will remodel or model in terms of the way you use it and the alignment and the directions you move it. I'm paraphrasing badly, but basically we can do a lot more than we give ourselves credit for in terms of changing connective tissue. You know, you look at like a knees over toes guy, Ben Patrick, what he's done with his programs, he's showing that you can do some pretty crazy things that people thought were not possible with connective tissue in terms of getting to very extended in range positions and still maintaining strength without injury. So I think those kind of extreme cases show us, along with the new research, that there's a lot we can do to affect joint health. And if you think about exercise as not just muscles, and I'm kind of focusing in on people that are focused on building muscle. If you think about your training program as also training your connective tissue and understanding, okay, my tendons and ligaments are being stressed. They're also going through a process of breakdown and building up. I think that's really helpful for, I guess, thinking holistically about fitness in general, but also just being aware of what's going on in your body and knowing when it's time to back off if you're having an issue with a repetitive use injury that's kind of piling up on you.
So that leads us into mobility training. You have a whole chapter on the science. Matter of fact, it's called science-backed mobility training. So I'm anxious to just kind of hear your recommendations on this and your discoveries on this, because that's my Achilles heel, if you will, is my mobility. It's terrible. Now I'm older than you, but I still lift. Matter of fact, I do CrossFit, but I'm limited in a lot of the CrossFit movements, the powerlifting movements, because of my mobility. And I think part of it is just, I was born that way. Part of it is, I'm older, and, you know, got some muscle on me, and I think that makes me a little tighter. So talk about, I guess mobility, kind of what you have learned and how, a guy like me, for example, can increase their mobility.
Sure. Well, I really try to approach everything from the most practical standpoint I can. So as an example, even if the research said, hey, stretching every muscle in your body 30 minutes a day is the best way to get flexible, people just aren't going to do that. Even really dedicated people who it's very important to aren't going to do that. So to start with, people hate stretching in general, unless you're a masochist. So from, you know, when I train people, I would notice that adherence to training or stretching in general was very low. Whereas getting people to go through a flow-based movement sequence, like it's basically like a vinyasa yoga sequence or a flow mobility sequence. That is a little more skill-based and it's interesting to people. So just from a adherence standpoint, from a client behavioral standpoint, to me, that makes dynamic or moving through stretches kind of in a fluid manner much more effective than traditional static stretching. So I talk a lot about static stretching in there, and there's certainly times and places where static stretching makes sense, but for me personally, and anybody that I work with, 90% of mobility training, which, you know, mobility could mean a lot more than just stretching your muscles, 90% of it's dynamic movements, meaning moving to a stretched position or in range position and then coming right back, not in a fast, jerky way, but you know, if you look at some of the exercises in the book that I recommend, it's getting to an end range and then coming back to center and getting to an end range again, maybe doing that 5 times and then moving on. So for me personally, just establishing a kind of a mobility routine takes me 3 to 5 minutes. And I do that every morning and then a variation of that before every workout. Just practicing getting into those positions has made me a lot more flexible. And I'm not a flexible guy. I'm not naturally that way. Even after a lot of work, I'm not super flexible, but I've figured out how to mobilize the joint systems and the movements that I need to prevent the injuries that were happening to me. So in the book, I talk a lot about stability over mobility. And I think that that's important as well, to give people understanding that it's not just about being super Gumby flexible. It's about controlling your movement in certain positions. And sometimes more mobility is not necessary. It's not what you need. Sometimes stability is even more important. So I think that expanding how we think about mobility, especially for people who are not super familiar with the literature, is really helpful for just looking at it more holistically again, rather than just, oh, I need to be super flexible, so I should be stretching constantly. Because you don't have to be super flexible in every movement to be efficient and to prevent injury.
Talk, if you will, more specifically about your routine. You said you do something every day for about 3 to 5 minutes. I have started using a PVC pipe, and I'll do like maybe try some overhead squats with the, you know, PVC pipe and different things like that. And sometimes I use a foam roller. Talk about specifically like the movements that you do in the morning that only take you 3 to 5 minutes.
Sure. So I do a quick mobility routine in the morning that's kind of full body. And that's in the book as well, but it's pretty basic. The world's greatest stretch is definitely in there, where you're kind of in a lunge position and twisting to help with thoracic extension. So I do that. And that's just a few quick movements before I sit down at the computer. And then throughout the day, I actually used to have timers set to remind myself to get up and do this. Anymore, I just do it intuitively. I'll work a lot on thoracic extension, because no matter how hard I try, my body wants to hunch over the computer.
Same
here. You can't see it here, but I've got a Swiss ball that I'll lay on to get a little better extension, or at least practice getting into back extension there. And then behind me, you can see I have these TRX straps. I don't really work out with those here. I use them basically just, I get in my chair and I back up and I open up my shoulders and just give myself a little bit to, you know, take a break from hunching forward. So I think what I would tell people is figure out what your Achilles heel is, your tight muscles or your movement patterns that are bothering you, and just really prioritize those. So to start with, doing a full body mobility routine and trying to make everything super flexible, it's tough. And even for, like I said, for people who are dedicated, they're unlikely to stick with it. But for me, if I can say, okay, my tight shoulders and tight pecs are just constantly causing me issues, what if I just focus on that? That's the one thing that I do every day, a couple of times a day, you know, in between checking emails. That's been really impactful for me.
So you talk about preventing the big three. So what is the big three?
So the big three that I'm referring to are shoulders, low back, and knees. Those to me are the core three joint systems that if they get messed up, everything's messed up. Obviously there's neck injuries and neck problems that are very common. That's really outside the scope of this book. This book's more about exercise and corrective exercise to fix common fitness related injuries. Neck issues, I don't mess with. If somebody asks me about their neck, I'm like, go see somebody. There's too much risk there. So arguably that could be in the mix, but in terms of total search volume, low back, shoulders, knees, those are the common joints that people are complaining about. And I've seen the same thing, you know, in our business, as well as people asking about how to fix and prevent and resolve pain in those three joints.
So is the answer of preventing those, does it just go back to what you've been talking about as far as, you know, mobility and, you know, good form and all that kind of stuff?
You know, I would say, yeah, that's kind of through line of the book is I try to be principles focused, but for each of those three joints, they kind of have their own story. You know, with low back, that's the one that people complain about more than anything else. And if you look at like Google search volume, more people search low back pain or back pain than all the other joints combined. So I would say there's some nuances. I don't think it's exactly the same approach for each one. There's definitely some commonalities. Like I've found for low back pain, people have a tendency to just start yanking on it. Their back stiff or hurts. They start bending over doing toe touches and, you know, basically just mobilizing these hurt muscles or facet joints or whatever it is they're antagonizing that even more, whereas they'd be a lot better served, like I said earlier, improving thoracic mobility and activating their glutes. So focusing on the joints above and below the problem area, I find is really helpful. So that's definitely a through line there. But, you know, each joint is different. The knee is a big, dumb joint. It's very simple. It bends like this, whereas the shoulder does all kinds of crazy stuff. So each one definitely has its nuances. So what I try to do is list out, here's 4 to 6 things, principles that are common among pain within this joint. And if you focus on these, you have a really good chance of preventing pain there.
Let's just focus on the low back pain for a minute, since you said that's the most common. What is the, is there a single like biggest mistake that people make? And I'm talking about when they're working out and stuff that causes low back pain.
I would say my thoughts on this are evolving, but I think hip mobility is a big thing. Somebody asked me the other day if I could only focus on one stretch or one thing for my low back. And I was like, well, you really shouldn't focus on just one thing. But if I had to narrow it down, I would say hip mobility. You know, when your hip flexors are tight, it's pulling on your low back all the time. So if you're going to try to go and do a squat or a deadlift, you are just at that much more risk of tweaking something in your low back. Because it's what happens a lot of times is the low back, which should be a stability-based joint, has to be a mobility-focused joint because our glutes are turned off and we're not using our legs the right way. Or, you know, our upper back is so tight that we're not able to mobilize there. So in terms of low back, I would say mobilizing the hips is probably number one from my experience. And there's people that are a lot better with low backs than me. And then secondarily would be just activating the glutes, you know, doing that fire hydrant drill where you're just going into abduction and just burning out your glutes. Sometimes that's all it takes to relieve pain and relieve some of that stiffness and tautness in people's low back.
Yeah, that's definitely my issue is tight hips, which, you know, causes low back problems just because of my hips. So
it's tough. We sit all day, you know, it's tough to keep them loose.
All right. So the second part of the book is all about the training program. And so that's maybe what people want to know. And so in your research, what kind of training program, and this is maybe assuming somebody is not injured, and so just a middle-aged guy that is in the gym, what kind of training program do you typically recommend?
So if I could only pull one piece out of the training program I recommend, it's inserting a week where you're focused on really slowing down the repetitions. So in the book, I call it heavy, slow resistance training. Some people would refer that to just slow resistance training, but basically every third or fourth week, instead of going in and jacking heavy weights or doing more dynamic power-based movements, you're really slowing down, taking 3 to 5 seconds on the eccentric or down portion of the exercise, and even kind of controlling it slowly on the way back, in the way back up. That to me prevents more injuries than anything else. So one piece of advice to people who are not willing to completely scrap their program, it's like, hey, every third or fourth week, off and slow down your repetition speed. Sometimes that's gonna help heal a lot of those little junky scar tissue formations that are piling up in itself. And those things don't happen, you know, overnight. The amount of acute injuries or traumatic injuries that have an overuse component it's staggering. It's almost every injury has an overuse or degenerative component where it's been building up over time. So to me, that's the most impactful way to prevent injury. And if a person's never done it, it's also a gut buster. You know, if you're really working hard and controlling the weight for 5 seconds down, doesn't matter what the movement is, it takes a lot of focus and you'll be sweating bullets by the end of it.
Yeah. So I just interviewed the guys that wrote a book called Deep Fitness. I don't know if you're familiar with that, and I can't remember their names, but they call it mindful, slow, resistant training to failure, I think. And they're doing one rep, one set per body part, but like a minute and a half set. And so like 45 seconds up, 45 seconds down. And so I've tried that just a few times and for something different, kind of thrown it in, and it's tough.
Yeah. So they're taking like the body by science
concept. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yep. Anyway. Yeah. I think doing things like that. Now I can't really get 45 seconds. I'm lucky if I get 30, you know, so maybe a 1 minute set, but doing things like that, especially every now and then, I think is great.
Yeah. I wouldn't, you know, some of these programs, and I'm not saying they are, but some of these programs are basically making the case that this is a hack and you can do this instead of the traditional weight training routines. But you know, I don't know how many IFBB bodybuilders are using that, and they're, they're the best in the world. But yeah, from a therapeutic angle, I think it's a great tool.
Yeah. And so what's your thought on more kind of functional fitness, something like CrossFit? You know, I've done that off and on over the years.
Yeah.
Doing it now, as long as, and I know a lot of people can get injured doing that, but I feel like as long as you're smart about it and use the proper amount of weight and use good form, I felt like it has really done a lot for me as far as, you know, my mobility and just kind of overall functional fitness. What is your thought on a program like that?
Yeah. Well, first, in regards to CrossFit, I love CrossFit. I am in awe at people who can do CrossFit, and the elite CrossFit people are, I mean, that just blows me away.
They're crazy. Yeah.
Unbelievable. So I used to do CrossFit. I don't anymore. And there might be a period of my life when I try it again, but I just kept hurting myself at that time. I can't blame that on CrossFit. I just had terrible mobility and I was doing really dumb stuff, like going in and trying to do muscle ups without warming up. So it's no wonder I was constantly injured. Again, that's not CrossFit's fault. That's me not understanding the deficits I had and doing the prerequisite work. But yeah, if somebody's healthy enough, CrossFit's amazing. Obviously people get injured a lot, but you know, that's an extreme sport. So if somebody's just trying to have longevity and be basically healthy, maybe that's not for them, but for, you just can't argue with the results in terms of athleticism and physique accomplishment. But yeah, functional fitness in general, you hear that term and it's almost I can't think of the word, but it's almost a negative connotation now. You know, functional fitness, it gets made fun of. You kind of picture somebody like standing on a BOSU ball and holding a kettlebell and doing some kind of elastic all at once and basically just wasting their time. So there, that happens. You know, there's somebody doing that in every gym. But I do think at a core level, training in a way that aligns with a sport or training in a way that helps you to do something specific in your life, that's functional to me. So I think there's absolutely room to add functional fitness into more specific and legitimate, like mainstream training. Let's say you're just weightlifting, trying to build muscle, or you're exercising to lose fat. I think there's absolutely room to do functional movements, meaning things that challenge total body coordination, or maybe challenge your, you know, this is a buzzword, your core. So I think there's room for that. I'm not against that by any means, but it's one of those terms that has gotten kind of bent and skewed. So you never know what people mean by it.
I think the important thing here in kind of summary, I think you'll agree with this, is incorporate resistance training, you know, in your routine. And the more that I get into this and learn about just health and wellness and longevity, it seems like I've been having this conversation a lot. You know, muscle keeps coming up. And if, you know, muscle is the most metabolically active tissue, you know, we naturally lose muscle as we get older, which contributes to a lot of, you know, chronic diseases. Sure. And so I think no matter your age, if you focus on building muscle, which requires adequate protein intake, and it requires some form of resistance training. And so however you're doing it, whether you're doing CrossFit or whether you're doing this, you know, whatever, I mean, I think you need to incorporate fitness training, or excuse me, resistance training in your overall fitness routine.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Even for people who are not, who have really no value in being strong. Let's take a long distance runner. You know, some of the runners that I know that have had the most longevity, they take resistance training very seriously. Now they're not in there like squatting four plates, but they know that running long distances is very destabilizing to the knee. So they're counter training that. They're doing resistance training that kind of prevents those muscle imbalances and helps bring things back together, so to speak. But yeah, I think everybody can and should do it. And there's still a little bit of a stigma with it that it's going to get you hurt. And obviously done the right way or wrong way, it absolutely can get you hurt. But I think it's a life skill that everybody really needs to have. So yeah, I try to make that case in my blog and throughout the book as well.
Talk briefly, if you will, you talked about your kind of warm-up routine in the morning that you do as far as mobility and stuff, but you know, what does your workout routine look like on a day-to-day basis? And has it changed since you kind of did all the research for this book?
Yeah, I use a lot of the same principles. So the way I structure my workouts, I try to, at least from a, like a mesocycle standpoint, I try to have 1 week dedicated to a certain thing, whether it's heavy resistance training. The next week will be more, let's say, bodybuilding type resistance training, and then some endurance or functional stuff. So I don't just go to the gym and lift. I do other things, and I have some hobbies and sports that I do on the side. So I want to be able to use my body, you know, in addition to doing all the weightlifting and muscle building stuff. But I would say since the book, something that I've really taken to an extreme is trying to expand my functional range of motion in those joint systems that are broken down. So as opposed to working around things, I'm really going straight at it. For example, with shoulders, I would always avoid things. Like still to this day, if I do a snatch, I'm probably going to rip my shoulder out of socket. I've had my labrum reconstructed. It's just a bad idea for me. If I dedicated my life to it, I'm sure that I could get a perfect snatch, but it's not a priority for me right now. But there's other exercises that I'll avoid, like dips. Dips is one of the main exercises that causes injuries to shoulders. And I've injured my shoulders doing dips. Not to say dips are bad. In fact, I'm using that right now to try to get as strong as I can and mobile as I can and the most extended range of motion position I can get to safely. So one of the things I've incorporated every week, in addition to more stability work with my shoulders, you can tell I have ongoing shoulder issues, is really slowly expanding that range of motion to where I can get all the way down, fully extended into a dip and load it up. So that's something I've worked on very, very slowly. But my thought process is if I can get to where I can do a full range of motion dip heavy and my shoulders are back and lats are engaged and everything's in place, my shoulders will be a lot better for it. So that's something that maybe in a second edition I would double down on, is getting more aggressive with attacking those joints or those mobility ranges where you're weak or short, and going beyond, expanding beyond what you're capable of right now. That didn't really answer your question about what I do day to day, but that's been a big focus for me anyway.
So we could spend a whole, you know, podcast talking about supplements. I didn't ask you about supplements, but that's one of the things that you do on your website. And so just talk briefly about supplements as they pertain to healing, since we're, you know, the title here is built from broken. Yeah. But so what are the most important supplements to not only prevent injury, but then if we have an injury, you know, to recover from that?
Sure. I would say the first thing is just make sure you don't have any deficiencies, you know, so getting enough vitamins and minerals, macronutrients, protein, that's step one. And a lot of that we can do through diet. But much of what I think we can do from a supplement standpoint is just give our body the raw materials it needs to recover with. And then to go beyond that, the second level would be things that actually support the healing process. So for me, mentally, I kind of divide things up into two categories, which would be inflammation and pain control, and then the rebuilding element. There's other things like, you know, there's antioxidants and oxidation processes that can be affected. But for joint health, if you look at joint supplements in general, that's generally the two directions things go. And the vast majority of that is focused on inflammation, pain, and symptoms. So there's definitely some supplements that are super research backed that help with inflammation and pain, you know, type 2 collagen, Boswellia, turmeric or some of the big ones, fish oil. And then from a rebuilding standpoint, collagen, absolutely. It's funny, I actually wrote an article several years ago about collagen being overhyped. I was just tired of all the, you know, hucksters out there selling this super cheap collagen and saying it's going to heal your hair and skin and eyes and organs, and it's this fountain of youth. And I don't have the article anymore, but I still believe everything I wrote there. But it wasn't until I came across Gelita is the name of the company. They're a German manufacturer. They engineered a collagen that specifically targets specific parts of your body. So they have one collagen that the molecular profile of the collagen matches the tendons and ligaments in your body. So you're much more likely to get a therapeutic or physiological response when you consume it. So the research on that is a lot stronger than just generic collagen. But yeah, I think from an injury standpoint, anything that helps you naturally modulate or kind of control inflammation and pain to the point where you're not blocking it, but you're controlling it. And then from a rebuilding standpoint, you know, collagen peptides from a reputable source. Those are the ones that I stick to and that I recommend the most.
Well, very good. Well, anything else that I didn't ask you that you just want to throw out there, you know, kind of any big points that we missed in the book? I know we just kind of scratched the surface.
No, this was good. I think you covered it well. I think if there's one thing that I would want to say that I didn't really cover here is, the value of doing a little bit each day. You know, we always want to have these big heroic efforts to fix things, but especially with injuries, it's such a long road. I always tell people, if even if you tweak a joint just for 12 weeks, put it in your head for 12 weeks, you're going to be doing something to work on that. So what happens a lot of times is people start working through a problem and they feel better and like, oh, I'm done with that. But really, there's a lot more to the healing process than just what you're feeling. Not only that, to really prevent injuries from coming up again, you almost have to be stronger and more mobile than you were before. Right? If you think about it, your previous fitness level was not good enough to prevent injury. So that's something that I would like to, I guess, double down on again if I rewrote it or expanded on the book. But other than that, no, I think we covered it well. I appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Well, very good. So the name of the book is Built from Broken, and people can find that, I know, on Amazon and then your web. What is your website that you have your blogs and stuff on?
Saltwrap.com. So that's SALTWRAP.com.
Okay. Very good. Any other way that people can get a hold of you? Are you on social media or anything?
Try not to be.
Okay. Good for you.
No, I'm not really. I do some stuff through our business social media profiles. So we're working with a group that they're encouraging me to do more of that. But like we were talking about earlier, I've enjoyed being in hermit mode. And I like researching and writing.
Yeah.
And but you know, this next phase of building the business, I definitely see the value of engaging with people in different formats. And it's something that, you know, I'm kind of in a comfort zone. I like writing, researching the business, and I'm having fun with that. But I do see this as a comfort challenge. So maybe in the future, but right now, yeah. Saltwrap.com is the best place to see our stuff or see me.
Okay. Well, very good. Well, I always close by asking my guest if they could give us one health tip that would make us healthier today. What would you say?
One health tip. I would say, well, I'm going to stick to the theme of injuries. When you have an injury, whether it's traumatic and severe or just something minor, think of that as a situation where you have to come back 120%, which means you're 20% stronger, 20% more mobile. This is something mentally that's helped me a lot, because we tend to just do this corrective exercise stuff just enough to get to where we can do the things that got us hurt in the first place. So if we can flip that and say, okay, now that I hurt this elbow, my wrist extension and my shoulder mobility, it's all got to be 20% better than it was even before. So just getting back to baseline is not enough. Going beyond that's really necessary to prevent it in the future. And this is something I've seen from some of the smartest and most dedicated athletes that have amazing longevity, is they're really good at, first of all, they're very intuitive with their bodies, but they're really good at addressing these injuries and kind of fortifying their body against it so that it doesn't happen as often in the future. But yeah, I guess in our relevant conversation, that's what I would leave with.
Well, very good. Well, all right. Well, we appreciate your time. Scott Hogan, Built from Broken, and appreciate everyone listening, and hope everyone out there has a great day, and we will talk to you next time.
Awesome. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you for listening to FitRx. I invite you to share this with friends and family. If you would like, you can check out our website at vibrantlifedc.com. Or you can email me at drgreg@vibrantlifedc.com.